It is 22 minutes past the hour. It's a Transcendent Tuesday, and that would mean Dr. Don Clark joins us for a conversation. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a vintner in his own right. I should say an award-winning vintner. Again, two more gold medals, Don. Is that what I hear?
Two more gold medals, yes. One for our Blondie and one for our blackberry-flavored wine called Mora.
Mora, okay. Yeah, I've tried that. I've tried, and Blondie is my favorite in your whole panoply of flavors there. You give creative names to it, but an ordinary winemaker might call it what? Sauvignon Blanc?
Well, no, actually, it's a Blanc de Bois,
Blanc de Bois, which is
a French-American hybrid that was developed in Florida, Gainesville, Florida.
Okay.
A hybridization of French varietals with an American varietal for specific properties, mainly to be able to survive here in the South. It's tolerant of a disease called Pierce disease.
Okay.
And so it grows quite well here, actually.
So you just taught us about some of the thinking that has to go into how you grow grapes. It's not you plant a grapevine and then you make wine. There's a little more to it than that. And it involves your biochemical talents as well, your biochemistry experience and your pharmaceutical experience. And we're going to call on that today because we're talking about COVID and the pandemic and the misinformation that surrounds it. It's hard to cut through this for a layman and decide, so what is the science? One side says, trust the science, and the other side says, trust the science, but they have different answers. And how are we supposed to make sense of this? I had a communication with my son, Chris. He works in the movie business out in Los Angeles. And we had a weekly phone conversation and talking about cooking and food and entertainment and all kinds of things. And it somehow got around to face masks, because in California, there's some pretty strict restrictions. Not only are they in the midst of a lockdown and the restaurants aren't open and so forth, and we're kind of worried about Chris. He's in this nice apartment, but he's all by himself, and his business is still working, but he walks to work and he wears his mask and there's not a lot of people around and it's kind of dour. And we said, well, maybe, what do you think about those masks? And he said, well, you have to wear a mask because it'll protect you and it protects everybody. And I said, oh, wait a minute, there's another opinion on that, you know. And I told him about a couple of articles I'd read, and I emailed him a link to one. It was a Federalist opinion piece on masks. I thought it was cogent, very well written, very sensible, not inflammatory. And he emailed me back, and he said, Dad, be careful. That's a right-wing extremist site. And everything they have is nothing but spin. And it occurred to me, and I don't want to start an argument with him, but I'm saying, okay, if it is that, contend with the information. Counter it. What's the other argument? Just because it's right wing, and it leans right, I don't consider it Federalist extreme at all. But just because it's conservative, it's wrong, or just because it's liberal, it's wrong. Is that what we've come to? Is that how we characterize the information? Who looks at the facts? Does science look at the facts? And we have a couple of articles as the subject matter today. One. The Great Barrington Declaration, bunch of scientists, 23,000 of them got together and basically said lockdowns are injurious. The other article talks about there really is no new wave expected in this pandemic. We're past that because we're falsifying expectations by misreporting a positive COVID test. Where's the truth here, Don? I know it's a lot to handle, but where do you start?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of this, of course, is wrapped up in the political realm as opposed to the scientific realm. And so that's where you kind of have to start and say, is this, is this politics as usual, or is there some actual science behind it? Now, with regard to the lockdowns, I can't remember I don't go back infinite amount of time, but I am fairly old. I can't remember a time when or a rationale for locking down healthy people and quarantining them as opposed to quarantining the sick. I mean, in the past, and it was a good practice, and you quarantine the sick and make sure that they are isolated from the general population. But the general population should go about their business as usual. This is not what we had here. We were told to immediately lock down. And the reason given was because, this virus is going to be, you're going to have a large, very high death rate. And it's very, very contagious. And they're going to be, it's going to be overwhelming for the medical community to be able to handle everybody. So we want to flatten the curve. Well, we did flatten the curve and people got, locked down for a while. But then after the curve was flat and we found out that, the hospitals don't have anything to do, because regular patients weren't coming in for their normal checkups, heart patients and others, and cancer patients weren't coming in for their regular checkups, as well as we didn't have the flood of COVID patients that they were expecting. And but yet we were still told to lock down because, look at the number of people who were getting the virus. And so in order to, they changed the story, basically from let's lock down so that we can flatten the curve to basically let's stop spreading the disease, period. And so these two articles actually go quite nicely together. Because,
yeah, they do, yes.
one says, hey, we've got all these scientists and medical professionals out there saying there's really no reason to be locking down. There's no reason to close the schools. And there are many, many articles on that one, closing the schools. I mean, the lowest risk the population is the younger population, that has a strong immune system, their percentage of deaths is extremely low, and it's in the elderly population that, of course, is the higher the risk. And now we know that. We know how to treat the disease. There's several treatment modalities out there that lessen the actual cause of death from this disease, which is the hyperimmune response that happens in some patients that have weak immune systems and other complications like diabetes and heart disease. And so we know how to kind of flatten that part out of the response by saying, hey, part of the treatment is to you don't want the hyperimmune response, so let's give some steroids. Maybe steroids would help. And lo and behold, steroids do help. We have some new antivirals out, even old drugs like hydroxychloroquine. We won't get into that discussion today, but, all of these things have worked together to basically really reduce the number of deaths that we're seeing from this disease. So it seems to me that we can manage the disease quite well. And then, there is if you're not at risk, if you're not elderly, if your immune system is not compromised, there really is no scientific reason now, with all the data that we have, to lock yourself up in your room or in your house and not get out and be productive in society again.
There is a link, by the way, to each of these articles in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to read it later or follow along. The one Dr. Yaden is insisting, and that's the second link in the chat window, that the lockdown practiced over much of Europe and the rest of the world early in the year was led up That is, it was really people were released from lockdown. Remember those stories in Spain and Italy and in France, and that there really has been no surge, no second wave of this pandemic. That the way it's being reported in the media, it's information based upon false positive tests, which add greatly to the number of supposed cases that don't really exist as COVID cases. And so he's saying that there's stats, there's graphs there, pretty pictures, but you can take a look at it. And he's overlying death rates from one country to the next, and they all are following the same pattern, which is a great reduction in a low level of deaths now compared to earlier in the year, despite all of these so-called false positives. And the other article has to do with, again, the 23,000 scientists and medical professionals that are saying don't lock down. The declaration says the results, to name a few, include lower childhood vaccination rates. These are the results of lockdowns. Worsening cardiovascular disease outcomes, fewer cancer screenings, and deteriorating mental health, leading to a greater excess mortality in years to come, with the working class and younger members of society carrying the heaviest burden. And Don, if that's true, that just should not be. So how do we bring the decision makers to the table here?
Well, the decision makers, of course, are politicians and, the folks in the government. Now, they should be listening to their medical professionals, but even the medical professionals have been biased along the lines of let's use super precaution so that way nobody can, I don't know why, but nobody can sue us if we are overcautious here. But at the same time, it's having a tremendous impact on our economy. It's having a tremendous, can you imagine what the, we've lost essentially a year of education with our kids, for the most part, because back in March they were let out of school, didn't come back, for the end of last school year and the beginning of this school year, they were locked in for the most part. And lo and behold, they found out that, hey, this online instruction is not working for 80% of the kids. And 80% of the kids were failing. And even in our local school district here, the kids were not getting it because it was too complicated. It was, you got to, with some classes, as soon as you log into the class, you're given credit. But with other classes, you had to do something else in order to make sure that you attended the class. So there was just a lot of confusion. And
I've heard some comments by teachers too that they can't tell when a child isn't getting it. They have don't have the personal and so there's no help for that child. At the moment he needs it.
Well, at the moment he needs it, even if he does the work, if you have to click on another, another link in order to say that you were logged in that day, then that's a problem. I mean, you could be watching the videos or you can be doing the work online, but if you, didn't check the box, then you didn't get credit for the class, which happened actually to my grandkids. As a couple of my grandkids, they weren't. I mean, the instructions were there, but kids don't, the younger kids don't read the instructions. They just, they watch the videos and whatever. So there was it has a tremendous impact on our kids, even going to school, or in this case, not going to school, but trying to do school at home, which just didn't work. And then, of course, all the folks that aren't necessarily going to work, or the businesses that have been closed because of the virus and because of the lockdowns, I think is a travesty. And we should have be more cautious in doing these drastic measures in order to control this disease. Now, with regard to what's happening, now, we've seen an uptick in the people who have reportedly gotten COVID, and you know, as people do get out and about, then they're going to be passing the disease along. But what we're finding, if indeed, let's assume that all of the people who test positive, it's actually a positive test and not a false negative, as this one article suggests.
False positive, there are yeah.
A lot of, yeah, I mean, a lot of false positives in the testing. Let's assume that the folks that have tested positive are actually positive for the disease for the moment. It does not explain the tremendous reduction in deaths, the corresponding deaths. So if you look at the number of people who've had COVID according to the positive test, and the number of people who have died, that, you know, the percentage is going down. I mean, way down. Yes, there are still some more deaths, but in every country that's portrayed here, in the United States, wouldn't be any different. It's the deaths are actually continuing to go down, whereas the amount of people supposedly being infected is going up. You could have, you know, that could be for two reasons. One is they're doing more testing, so therefore we will have more false positives, for one thing. And the other is we're doing more testing, and so you're going to have.
I've heard a couple of anecdotal stories here, even secondhand, but they're from real people, so I believe them. In one case, a young man was tested at a you know, drive-in testing station, and I want to say it's Montana, but I don't remember for sure where it was. He got a positive test, and they said, you have to come back tomorrow, and we'll retest and retest until you test negative, and then you're okay. So he came back the next day, tested positive again. Came back the next day, tested positive again. The result? 3 positive tests in the tally.
Mm. Wow.
It was the same case. And I think this is not really a scientific problem. It's a management problem. And it's carelessness. And it's maybe to be expected. I mean, this is an unusual situation. People are doing unusual things and in strange circumstances. But there are a lot of mistakes being made. And we need to recognize that, I think.
Well, we do. And the other thing is that the test itself, you know, they say to do the PCR, the polymerase chain reaction test, is the, in quote, most accurate test. However, there are problems with it, because that type of test, I mean, it tests for the actual viral RNA in this case, right? So we're looking for a signature of the virus in your blood or in your, the nose swabs or wherever. And so that test actually goes through cycles. So every cycle, it amplifies the results. And so you get, it's like a signal to noise type of problem. The more you amplify the signal, the better you can say that, okay, there must be something there. And so the scientific background now is, the scientific data that I've read is that a true positive is if you show virus at the level of 17 cycles. The problem is that they've been going for 30 to 45 cycles, and at that point, you're picking up, you know, you could be picking up your common cold that you actually happen to have, which is a coronavirus itself, and it's amplifying it to the point where it looks like the COVID-19 virus, which is slightly different than your common cold. It is a coronavirus, so, you know, you are picking up a coronavirus, but it may not be the COVID-19 coronavirus. And so they would call that a positive test. And in, you know, in that case, in, you know, of course, in the pharmaceutical business, in the biopharmaceutical business that I was in, you had to develop tests for your whatever product that you were developing. And you had to develop, you know, you had to prove that your tests were accurate. And then you would have to prove what's the precision of the test and what's the accuracy of the test. And so you go through a whole series of testing, if you will, in order to get those two parameters. And that way you could say that, you know, with a 95% confidence level, I know that my drug is still active or my biological is still active. It doesn't appear to me that they've gone through that level of quantitating these tests. And if they haven't, then, and you keep running this until you finally get something positive, it's not giving the information that you need. So somebody needs to go back within these laboratories and say, here is the protocol that proves that this patient has had COVID. And instead of just, you know, running these tests, these cycles over and over again until you show a positive indication, which makes me, you know, it, from a scientific point of view, it makes me question why are we pushing this particular test so hard to show a positive, and which would indicate, of course, that would go back to the article by the fellow, what's his name?
Mike Yeadon, who was the former scientific advisor to Pfizer. Yeah, he's been in the pharmaceutical world for a long time.
To suggest that, indeed, the tests, or there's a lot more false positives than there should be because the tests haven't been certified and quantitated like normal biological tests and analytical tests should be.
Here's a tougher question, maybe. How much of a problem is money in all this? Because billions of dollars are at stake, and I'm thinking about vaccine development as well as testing.
Well, and that is a big problem because it costs, obviously, a lot of money in order to develop. It costs a lot of money to develop the test, costs a lot of money, even more money to develop vaccines. And, you know, the vaccine question is another big issue. And so a lot of money has been thrown.
And I've heard it said that a hospital makes more money on a COVID patient than a non-COVID patient. So that the deaths from COVID, the number of deaths, may actually be inflated by that reason alone. There may be a complex cause of death, but if they say it was COVID, somehow reimbursed by insurance companies or by the government because it was a COVID. Have you heard anything like that?
I haven't heard that, but it was interesting. The article's not here because the article has been actually retracted. But a gal from Harvard actually did a study of the CDC data, which is available to anybody who wants to do this, and looked at the number of deaths the number of deaths this year compared to the number of deaths in previous years. So it's pretty simple to do. You just, you know, do the research, you gather the data. And what she found was that the total number of deaths this year isn't any different than the total number of deaths from previous years. But what she also found was that the deaths from heart rate and other, you know, strokes and other complications has actually gone down, at least the reported deaths. And, of course, the COVID deaths have gone up, which means that just what you said, that perhaps the person actually died of a heart attack. They happen to have COVID, so they were reclassified as a COVID death as opposed to dying from a heart attack. I don't know if we're ever going to sort all of that out, in time to come. But, you know, we need to be rational about all of this. We just need to step back and say, I mean, you know, the Netherlands has pretty much said, we're not wearing masks anymore because the analysis that we've done shows that in the general population, mask wearing doesn't make any sense. And from a scientific viewpoint, mask wearing doesn't make sense with the general masks that we have. That is, you know, either the cloth mask or these blue polypropylene masks that you can buy by the hundreds. The virus is spread through your breath. And so in that case, these type of masks don't protect you from that. It allows your breath to go through the mask. Now, if you had an N95 mask that was actually fitted properly and didn't have the vents on the side that a lot of the N95s, who are, bought by the general public.
That seems to me to be self-defeating, those vents. I mean, whether it's in or out. I mean,
the vents actually allow your breath to go through, and guess what? Now you're contaminating the general population, or you're being contaminated because of the valves. So it doesn't make any sense. So we're coming up with these rules that out in the public you got to wear these masks, and it's gonna protect you. In actual fact, the studies have shown that it does not protect you. And
this reminds me a lot of a scientific diversity that we've talked about many times on this program, say between evolution and creationism. I mean, there's a scientific divide. It's not like there's a fence, you can go one side or the other. It's like there's a chasm in between. And in the middle is a whole lot of confusion and in gray areas where the science gets confused. It gets mixed with money, it gets mixed with politics. And the phrase trust the science has come to be meaningless. And so when I hear that, I automatically distrust the source.
Exactly. Yeah. Anybody who would say that, well, just trust the science, because the science here is you can find articles on both sides of the fence if you search hard enough. And the ones that get censored, interestingly enough, are the ones that are saying, it looks like, the pandemic's dying down, really. I mean, it looks like there is no rationale for locking down. Those are the studies that get censored.
Whereas, the Hopkins study, the one that we were just talking about, that the researcher by the name of Hopkins works out of Harvard, and she's the one that looked at CDC data, and her article was pulled off or pulled down. The Great Barrington Declaration was censored by Google in mid-October. And, I mean, there are enough search engines out there now that it's almost beside the point that, yes, Google's the biggest one, but there's still a way to get information about the Great Barrington Declaration. Now, for whatever reason, Google spiked it in mid-October and declared that they, one of the pinheads said it was hate speech or something. I don't know. But who knows why they do things. But those are the articles that get taken down.
Those are the what you're talking about is what shouts to the heavens, conspiracy.
Yes.
And conspiracy theorists have been given a bad name, but there's a reason for conspiracy theorists. And they're not all stupid. Some of them are. But there's no reason why this information shouldn't be shared as equally as the countervailing opinion and let people decide for themselves. Maybe it's that politicians and the powers that be consider us the great unwashed masses and we're not capable of dealing with this ourselves. You suppose?
No, I think there is a greater sinister reason behind it, but we won't get into that.
Well, we can get into that.
I mean, this has become so political this year. It's interesting that it happened in 2020 as opposed to 2019 or 2021. Mm-hmm. It happened in 2020. The economy crashed because people were told to stay at home. And so, we had scarcities in the grocery stores and we locked down all the restaurants and we locked down all the bars and we locked down all of the, the tasting rooms.
you saw that firsthand.
So a lot of small businesses have suffered greatly, if not gone under, because of it. A lot of restaurants have gone under. So, but this is... as we see now, it doesn't appear that the lockdowns, especially now, make any sense whatsoever. But the government continues to push for that. It's almost like if we say it, you have to do it type of thing. It has gotten that bad, and it has actually affected, you know, many churches, in certainly on the West Coast,
oh, yes,
have been affected by this. So, you know, what's the agenda there to keep the churches closed down?
Well, at some point, I think the truth is going to come out, and we'll all understand this thing that's happening a little bit better. But the question then is, how much damage has been done in the meantime? And can we bounce back? Well, yes, we can bounce back, but how long and under what circumstances, and how many political revolutions will there be around the world as a result? And how many kids will not have been educated, not have been socialized with this whole procedure? Don, we're grateful that you spent some time with us again today. This is a subject we could talk about forever, and I wouldn't mind doing that, but you know, the clock calls. So,
yes.
Thanks for joining us. We'll look forward to next Tuesday. Dr. Don Clark, member of the Board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com, and it's an archive, a library of information that supports the biblical story of creation. It's scientific information, by the way, and I recommend a visit to creationmoments.com. And Don, have a great week, and give Andrea a hug for us, and we'll see you then.
Okay.
Next Tuesday. Okay. Bye-bye.
Very good. So long, folks.